Stephen Vladek. He's a professor of law and associate dean for a scholarship at the American University Washington College of Law. Stephen, how are you?
I'm good, Tony. How are you?
Very good. You're a newlywed, so everything's going good?
So far. Isn't that why they call it a honeymoon?
All right. yeah, that is true, Stephen. But we won't get into that right now. I want to stay out of trouble before the weekend hits. A few different stories I wanted to ask you about. I sent you some information. We got a note of a story that would require all applicants to undergo drug testing before getting public assistance. A lot of folks think that this is aimed at low-income families. This is a Florida case. Tell us what your reaction is when you saw the information I sent you.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the idea of sort of suspicionless drug testing is one that's caught on in a lot of areas over the last decade. You know, I suspect the place where most of us see it is it's increasingly prevalent in after-school activities, especially at the high school level. You know, Tony, there's actually a Supreme Court case from about 10 years ago where the court divided 5-4 in holding that schools could require participants in after-school programs and athletics, et cetera, to go through suspicionless drug testing. What's telling about that case, though, is even though they let the school administer the drug test, that really turned on two things. One, that minors, that school children, have not quite the same degree of constitutional rights as adults, and two, that schools have a particularly compelling interest in keeping drugs out of schools and keeping drugs out of these activities. You know, without both of those criteria, if you just were doing random drug testing as a condition of continuing public employment, I think it's an uphill battle on whether that's constitutional given that case from 10 years ago.
Yeah, I just find it interesting. We heard back from some folks who said that it seemed to make sense that if people were going to get public money, that we want to make sure that they're above board.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the policy argument totally makes sense, but you know, the concern that I think everyone has, or at least I hope everyone has, is, you know, the government usually has to have a reason related to why it's doing the drug testing. So, you know, if, for example, the government had lots of data that showed that people were taking public benefits and spending that money on drugs, right, I think that might change the calculus a little bit, because then, in theory, the drug testing is meant to ensure that the money that these folks are receiving is actually being used for the purposes for which it's earmarked. You know, the government can't just randomly throw up drug testing checkpoints wherever it wants. And so I think the question is, where's the line and which side of the line does this fall on? That may very well depend on whether this is just sort of one more hurdle for recipients of public benefits to jump through, or whether it's actually specifically related to a concern that the public benefit money is going toward drug purchases.
The American Health Lawyers Association is one of many professional and trade groups providing thoughts about updates regarding the Supreme Court case challenging the constitutionality of Obamacare, if you will. And I wanted to get your take on that information that I sent you.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, I think, you know, they're one of those groups that's been trying to sort of put out relatively objective information about the competing stakes on both sides. And I think, you know, I think their view is pretty accurate. I mean, just to sort of summarize it for, you know, for the listeners, I mean, I think the government's argument is, in effect, that there is a national market for health care and for health insurance, that Congress has a compelling interest in regulating that national market. You know, the Congress found that, for example, in 2008, state and federal government spent $48 billion on health care for individuals who did not have health insurance. So that's sort of the pro-government side of this, that, you know, this is a huge problem that Congress should be allowed to try to fix. And then the anti is that this is novel, right, that, you know, there really aren't that many examples of the federal government ever requiring individuals to consume a particular service or pay a penalty for doing so. You know, Tony, I think both of those arguments are right. I think it's just a question of which one the justices find wins, right? What trumps, the fact that this is a novel and unprecedented exercise of Congress's power, or the fact that when push comes to shove, there's a fairly straight line from requiring all Americans to carry health insurance to keeping down the cost of health insurance and providing for effective health care for all Americans. I don't think it's an either-or proposition. I think it's a question of which one wins.
Stephen, will the justices care if we can pay for it or not?
I think they will care, but I think the question is who's in a better position to make that assessment, right? The 9 unelected Supreme Court justices, or the folks who were sent into Congress. You know, if Congress, you don't have to get me started on all the things Congress does that makes no sense. But I think, here at least they had pretty compelling evidence that, $48 billion was being spent by the government because Americans couldn't pay for their health care, and because folks who were uninsured couldn't pay out of pocket to cover even ordinary trips to the doctor. And so I think the question is, if the justices buy that data, and I don't think there's any reason why they shouldn't, is that enough, right? Is that going to convince them that Congress could reasonably believe that the way to solve this problem was to require all Americans to carry health insurance?
I've got a minute left. A federal judge says gun owners need not provide good reason in Maryland. What did you think about that?
Yeah, so, this is, we've talked a couple times before about the implications of the Supreme Court's 2008 Heller decision, which recognizes an individual right to keep and bear arms under the Second Amendment. The Maryland law is a fascinating one because it says in order to carry a gun publicly, you have to have a license, and you can only get a license if you have a particularly good reason. Earlier this week, a district judge in Maryland struck down that law as violating the Second Amendment. You know, Tony, interestingly, the Maryland Court of Appeals, the state Supreme Court, had already upheld that law, so now there's a split. I think, the question is going to be, does the Federal Appeals Court in Richmond, which will hear the appeal in this case, side with the district court and strike the law down? Do they side with the Maryland Supreme Court and say the law is constitutional? If the former, if they go with the district court, I think this is going to go back to the Supreme Court, and we're going to find out just what the court meant about the right to keep and bear arms in public as opposed to in the privacy of our home.
Thanks so much, Stephen. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, Tony. You too.